listening to WKXL in the Morning. I'm your host, AJ Kierstead. It's time for the New Hampshire Business Update with Jeff Feingold, who's the editor of the New Hampshire Business Review. Get more from them at nhbr.com. So we're going to start off with New Hampshire Business Review has been annually hosting the New Hampshire 200, which brings in all sorts of leaders from across the state and various industries that you guys view as leaders. Can you speak to what the 200 is about?
Yeah, well, basically what it is was an attempt. We started it 2 years ago to gauge the most influential business people in New Hampshire. For years, there was a list of the most powerful people in New Hampshire, but invariably they would be the governor and the senators and the House Speaker. You know, it'd be the same crew over and over. Yeah. I said, well, you know, actually, when you think about it, it's not necessarily that's not the people. They have the people with the power, but they don't necessarily have the influence. And it's a different animal. And so we decided to survey really literally dozens and dozens of people from all over the state 2 years ago to come up with a list of 200. And it was a months long test. It took us about 7-8 months. So automatically I said, well, we're not doing this every year. It'd be too much. So we did a second list this year, and it was really pretty amazing. There's quite a few people who are still on it, which is no surprise, but we had a turnover, I'd say about 30% or more of people, because, you know, things have changed so much in COVID. There were, you know, people from the healthcare world and others that were maybe not on the list before or on there, and other people with great influence. And it also reflects more of the diversity of the state, because things have happened in the last 2 years where people are much more aware of, that it's a diverse state, and people have different voices, and people with different voices are saying things and being heard.
Yeah, one of the categories is nonprofits. I'd imagine that was severely turned over.
Yes, and that was really pretty impressive. So anyway, so part of it is to put together this book that goes to all our subscribers, and also we have an event which we fortunately were able to hold a week or so ago, over at the DoubleTree in Hilton. And many, many people showed up, but because of COVID, there were quite a few people who didn't show up. But there were still a lot of people. There's still about 200 people showed up, which I thought was pretty impressive for nowadays. And it was a great time. We, you know, our event people put together a beautiful event. I know a couple of the people said that the room in the Armory, I don't know if you know, not the Armory, the big hall there, mm-hmm. said never looked any better. So that was pretty cool.
That's great.
Anyway, it was really great, and it's a great chance for people from all over the state who maybe know each other but don't know each other that well to network and talk. Yeah. And that's really what all it was. There was no speeches. There were no speeches. There was no awards. It was just to recognize these people, and they're pretty eager to get together. Obviously,
Leaders, they're used to interacting with people on a regular basis, and that's something people have really been able to do for almost 2 years now. So,
and exactly.
There's like
exactly
10,
right. And
there's like 10 individuals from various categories, whether it's healthcare, education, nonprofits. And I mean, what are some of the big turnover industries that you'd say?
Well, in some of them, there was healthcare with some changes. And also, some of the areas were in tech and manufacturing, because those things are in a state of flux. And some other areas as well as that. Plus, also, you know, some people just kind of retired, and unfortunately, a few of our members of our list passed away in the last 2 years, and so that there was turnover there. And it was interesting. If you look at the list, compare the two lists, it really does amaze me. There's similarities, but it's pretty obviously different. And I was very proud of that, because we did the same kind of survey, surveying people all over the state, and then getting a list of several hundred, and, you know, and whittling it down, and going asking people what they think of this now and all. And it was, you know, and actually, one of the other things we asked the people who are on the list if they have any ideas of others who could be on the list next time. And I've already gotten suggestions from them, you know, who they think is missing, who could be on. So it's a great effort to kind of recognize that. Really, the founder of the Business Review, Don Madden, always told me this, and he's very right, which is why we cover a lot that goes on in Concord and in politics in general, is that the way the state's revenue structure is, almost all the taxes in the state are paid by businesses. Mm-hmm. and they have a great interest in what's going on in the state. And
they want to see it succeed. I mean, they don't want to see it just kind of flail around and just commute to Boston.
That's the other thing is that they really do. Most of these people are like so involved, deeply involved. Well, actually all the people in the influential thing are deeply involved in the community, in helping the community and working to support the community in so many different ways. And, it's just a recognition of that, how important the business sector is, the business community is to New Hampshire.
Yeah, it literally touches every single industry. I mean, example that's close to me through my full-time job is Lucy Hodder, who's the second time on the list. And if you need anything health policy, they're knocking on her door.
She's a perfect example of it. I mean, she's an amazing person who's who has great influence on that whole and that whole area of what's going on. And now in particular, it's pretty obvious how important she is.
So let's move on. You guys released an article on the public-private partnership with regards to transportation. What's going on with that program? Now,
that was interesting. It was an idea that came up a couple of years ago to go into put together these public-private partnerships with the New Hampshire Department of Transportation to try to beef up our infrastructure in ways that we can get more infrastructure in the transportation world without the state investing as much money as it needed to. We've seen an example of it. One of them is the most obvious example of this kind of initiative is the hooks at the rest areas on I-93. I mean, that's a public-private partnership. So, but they said, that's successful. Let's work on some other ones. So they came up with some other ideas. And one of them was actually to build another couple of rest areas over in Hampton on I-95. But one was in particular in the process of getting open. It was building a transportation center on the seacoast with the guy who owns Jim J. Albert, the guy who owns C&J, the bus line.
Oh, okay.
And it was getting along pretty well. They were going to found some property and they were going to build this thing. But then COVID hit and this whole public-private partnership thing got backburnered. And it's been as long as COVID's been. So we're going into the second year of not having this. And it was interesting discussion about how they haven't forgotten about it, but there are so many things going on that it's just backburnered like so many other initiatives that we've had in the last couple of years. But they it's not like they don't want to do it, but It was more. It's a discussion of what Jim Jobbett wants to do, the support he has, and how it's just not happening right now. But there were some suggestions were, deep sixth by the people working on it. Mm-hmm. But there are some very serious suggestions because there's a lot of need for certain kinds of infrastructure in places. But the state, because of its resources, isn't able to build them themselves.
Yeah, there's a serious lag across the three northern New England states. There's very little when it comes to highway services as you're driving along. You got to go way out of nowhere. As someone who grew up in Maine, you get Kennebunk, and that's it, unless you go up I-95 towards Auburn, Lewiston area. And the hooks at toll booths, at least anecdotally, were tremendous success. I mean, there's constantly people there. The common man owners there did just a crazy good job with putting putting it together, so it looks like a cute little tourist trap. Ultimately, if you catches your eyes, you go by.
That was a classic example. That was Alex Ray, owner of Common Man Restaurants, and Rusty McClear, who's the former owner of the Inns at Mills Falls, who's still developing things. And They did this effort. They put this together, and it was completely locally owned, locally operated. Not unlike if you go to Massachusetts, they have a lot of rest areas, but those are all,
just gas stations, glorified gas stations.
McDonald's McDonald's and Dunkin' and all that stuff. This is all local stuff, and it's a different kind of thing, a different kind of vibe. Plus, of course, they have two very very successful liquor outlets there.
Yes, they do.
You can drive by any day. See all the cars parked out front there, so it's an example of that kind of stuff that's the kind of thing they do in New Hampshire pretty well, actually. The government and business people working together, but because of COVID, like so many other things, it's being sidelined.
Yeah. Another aspect that was brought up in the article is the ability to have parking for people that are going to take mass transit, whether it's mainly the bus lines. Because right now, I mean, I know the one in Concord that's way out of the way and hard to get to. And to have something that's actually near the main highways and such would be a huge thing.
Yeah, that whole thing in Concord is another interesting story. Story on that for a long time. What's going to happen with it? I know that there's some kind of developer that open it, own it, but I don't know what the development's going to be. But it's, I mean, Concord really could use a really very substantial transportation center. I mean, this one's better than it used to be, as we all know, but it's still not as robust as it could be because it is the capital of the state.
Yeah, I mean, there's the one bus that you can get down to Manchester on that you've got to make sure you get the right time, and they change it without really being obvious. I did that one time when my wife had the car and was out of state. And then there's the random transit bus around town. But aside from that, I mean, that's it. Good luck finding an
Airport. When Mayor Pete, our transportation secretary, was in town earlier this week, or was it last week? Earlier this week, he specifically was talking about this commuter rail, how this is going to, that there will be an investment in New Hampshire in a rail from Boston to at least Manchester, and the plan is to make it the capital corridor, go all the way up to Concord, and that would be a big game changer. You know, if you look at the, there's one area in New Hampshire where there's actual real rail service, and that's the Amtrak down Easter that goes up to Portland from Boston, and it makes two or three stops in New Hampshire on the way. And one of them is Dover. And where that Dover rail station is has been a big development boom. There's apartments near there, retail, because people want to be near taking the rail. They go to, if they travel down to Boston, they're right there. It's like living in a real city. Mm-hmm. You know, as a kid who grew up in Brooklyn, I know what this is about. You know, there's a subway station everywhere. You just take the subway. And that's really what the idea behind that is. And that's why so many people in the development community, real estate development community, are big backers of commuter rail, because they see the opportunities to develop a lot of areas around there.
Wearing my skeptical hat, as I basically always do, is the tremendous cost to get it put in. And it's also not necessarily going to be serving the lower income portions of the state, unfortunately. Like the people that really need that consistent commute to Boston and such can't really afford that rail ticket necessarily.
Well, yeah, I know. I don't know what the plan is on that. And I agree with you that that's one of the concerns. But I did hear a number. You know, the Downeaster has, you know, it suffered through COVID like everything else. But at one point they were getting 60,000 commuters a week on that thing, and that's pretty good. And, you know, I know of people who live in Concord, who live in Manchester, live in Nashua, and all along that route, who would be more than eager to take a train down there. So I think the passengers are there. It would have to be subsidized. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't need to get into the whole discussion with U.S. transportation policy, but our highways are highly subsidized.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not we're not talking about something that's, it's not something new when it comes to transportation.
Yeah. I mean, my big question is that I'd love to see some, like we're talking just a few minutes ago about Concord, just the general public transportation around the city. I mean, I don't know what the solution is, unfortunately. I really wish there was a good option. It just really isn't. I mean, cars are basically it when it comes to these rural commutes.
Yes. And that's why, you know, it's funny because, you know, in a place like Boston or New York City, where there's always was a, you know, especially in New York, I'm very familiar with, where the taxi cab industry is a major industry. And they, you know, they've been suffering a lot because of Uber and Lyft. Hmm. And there's an argument made that, you know, the people in the cab industry, they pay several $100,000 or even more for a license to be a cabbie. And then people come with a car, could just be an Uber driver, whatever. But when you're living in a place like New Hampshire, those things are a godsend.
Yeah.
Having been able to call up someone for a ride to go wherever you need to go. And, you know, it's a really, it's a necessary thing. And I don't think, because Uber is not exactly the cheapest way to go, or Lyft, necessarily, but it is an option for people that wasn't there before. But it does show that if you don't have a car in New Hampshire, you're pretty much getting out of luck.
Moving on in the last 5 minutes here, there's an article on the Coos County Family Health Services, which got some money and to establish a healthcare residency program to get doctors.
Yeah, that's really a big deal because there's a thing. Actually, there's one in Concord right now that's been going on with Dartmouth. It's called it attracts people who are studying. Medical students who are going into their residencies to come to the community and spend 3 years doing their practice as a family of physician, which is a practice that's in dire need around the country, but in particular in rural areas. And it's a program that has had great success in not just in Concord, but also in Augusta, Maine and Burlington. So now what they're doing it through Androscoggin Valley Hospital and the other hospitals in that home healthcare network up there, they're teaming up for this thing that would try to attract, they're hoping maybe 4 residents at some point at the beginning who could come up there and hopefully not just work there for a few years, but maybe decide to settle in the area because that's the main thing. But there's a great undersupply of physicians in the North Country.
Yeah, I feel doctors that are looking for residency will often go to the big cities or somewhere close to one of the larger medical schools. So to start opening up rural areas, especially with so many higher ed institutions focusing on equity and availability of healthcare, I mean, it's a great way of reaching out.
Yes, absolutely, and this is not going to solve everything, but it's one way of helping address this concern because it's, and first of all, it's not just family medicine physicians, many of the hospitals up there have got rid of obstetrics and gynecology because they couldn't find any obstetricians and gynecologists, and there's some other specialties that are just not there, and in many cases, the closest hospital is Dartmouth or Lakes Region or something, and it's not the most convenient thing in the world for a lot of things. So they're trying to improve the healthcare infrastructure up in the North Country. This is a big step towards doing that.
And I'd imagine a lot of doctors that maybe would do a residency like that would, in general, love to have that kind of in with being able to set their own doctor's office up in these communities because they would have made these connections. And because it's a rural office, you're more likely to make that one-on-one connection that you don't necessarily make in a hospital.
Yeah, I mean, and let's be honest, the North Country of New Hampshire is not top of mind for people, for physicians who are looking to think of do this. But if they find out they have this deal where they get incentives to go up there, they might say, well, I'll do it. I like to ski or whatever, and I'll give it a try. And they actually might say, I want to stay here.
I mean, Concord Orthopedics has been doing it since their existence. I mean, so many other doctors came from big cities, Philadelphia, Boston, absolutely, and such, and then they came up there and it's like, oh, I'd love to be able to have my family go skiing on the weekend and be able to have that lifestyle of a slower office compared to these larger places.
Yeah. Well, actually, if you're the only doctor though in within 100 miles
or
whatever,
good point.
It's not gonna be slow.
But it's a huge need. Like I said before, I mean, it's a big ethical push by so many people in higher education to start serving these communities that don't have anyone to do services like this, especially OBs, I bet.
Oh yeah, exactly. It's part of New Hampshire. It's not just the North Country. It has this problem. It's in a lot of different pockets of the state. Concord's doesn't have that problem necessarily, although they have this program. But certainly not the Upper Valley and Manchester. But you go to southwestern New Hampshire, you go to western New Hampshire. There are areas where it's not as robust a healthcare network, and everybody should have access to healthcare for crying out loud.
Yeah, they definitely need to expand those medical pockets. It seems like there's an area in Bedford, Manchester. There's Concord. Yeah. Go down Nashua. Go up to Portland, Scarborough area. So we really need to start expanding. So hopefully, fingers crossed, this will be a step in the right direction. Jeff Feingold, editor of the New Hampshire Business Review, thank you for joining me this week.
It's great talking with you.
You're listening to WKXL in the morning on 1450 AM, 103.9 FM Concord, 101.9 FM Manchester, and nhtalkradio.com.